And the time is 6 o'clock.
This is CKUW 95.9 FM, streaming at ckuw.ca. We hope you've enjoyed listening to us, and stay tuned. CKUW is managed by the Winnipeg Campus Community Radio Society in accordance with CRTC and Industry Canada rules and regulations. As a not-for-profit radio station, CKUW is a member of the National Campus Community Radio Association and adheres to their statement of principles to provide an alternative voice. CKUW operates on a frequency of 95.9 MHz on the FM band with 450 watts effective radiated power, or ERP. Our transmitter is located at 7 Evergreen Place in Osborne Village. Programming originates from our downtown studios at the University of Winnipeg in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. We would like to hear from you and welcome your ideas to improve listening, which will be heard on CKUW in years to come. Address your comments and suggestions to CKUW 95.9 FM, Room 4, CM11, 515 Portage Avenue, Winnipeg, Manitoba, R3B2E9. You can call 204-786-9782 or email us at ckuw@uwinnipeg.ca. This is Victoria King speaking for the Board of Directors, staff, and volunteers of CKUW 95.9 FM. Thank you for listening and stay tuned for more great community radio.
This is CKUW 95.9 FM. We're broadcasting from Winnipeg, Manitoba, on occupied Anishinaabe Aking, the homeland of the Métis and the historical territory of the Nahiyawak and the Nakota.
Good morning, friends. I'm Ron Robinson.
And I'm Carol McKibben.
We are the Saturday Morning Show. We're here for you for the next 2 hours, 6 until 8, and then it's Green Planet Monitor, 9 o'clock Mudpuddle Radio. We're here 24 hours a day, you know, 7 days a week here at CKWFM, etc. We're live from a small dark room, and this half hour we're setting Carol up on the roof because it's so lovely.
Yeah, I don't mind today. It's nice.
Exactly.
But it might be a little slippery up there.
The search goes on. The search goes on. Carol, we'll see what you can bring back. As well, I've got the answer to all the problems involving the world as well, and advice from Mary. And advice from Mary from the Spectator magazine. Now, a little too early for the weather, I was going to say.
Well, I'm just waiting for the music to end, and now I can check the weather and see. Nope, it's not too early.
All right.
It's -1 out there. So, see, I said it was nice, and it is. Barometric pressure, 101.5 and falling. Humidity, 91%. I think last Saturday it was like 65 or something.
I thought it was 62. Just a little joke.
No, very good. You're on early this morning.
Coffee.
Right, of course.
Coffee.
Wind coming from the northwest at 4, and the wind chill just -3. It's hardly anything at all. We didn't even feel any wind.
Boo-boo.
Mainly cloudy today, 30% chance of flurries. Risk of freezing drizzle early this morning, which may be over with. It was kind of crunchy, the snow underneath, yeah. Fog patches dissipating this morning, and then the wind coming from the west at 20 this afternoon. High today, 2.
Right,
so we're moving about, whatever, nudge. 3 or 4 degrees today.
Yep. Well, it was very nice out because it was a three-bunny morning.
It was a three-bunny morning. That doesn't happen often.
So good that we saw three rabbits.
Yes.
I'm thinking of going to Wannabe's again sometime on Broadway. Don't miss it. If you can't have that Wannabe burger, we should suggest to her, here's something you could add to your menu.
Ron.
A lot of rabbits.
You know
out
that's
there.
Wrong.
You just leave, hang a big carrot out the back door and over
like
here,
that.
Boys. Yep. 6:04. Quick
it
look at the sports.
It could be a chocolate carrot this weekend.
No, those prices? You know what's happening to chocolate? No. Through the roof.
Well, it will be going through the roof, so you better buy up all your chocolate now.
Well, I was thinking of Easter chocolate for you.
Well?
Monday.
I see. Okay.
Yep.
Easter Monday. Okay.
markdown day. 6:05.
Yep.
I'm now about to sneeze.
I could talk for you while you're busy sneezing. There he goes for a second sneeze. Yes?
I could be one of the seven dwarfs.
I'm thinking we might be playing Paul
sports.
Weston this morning.
Sports.
Oh, sports.
Yep.
Okay.
Hockey, the NHL, the Winnipeg Jets. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
Did they play again last night?
No, doesn't matter.
It's a good thing.
There's an old expression. It's heard in the Middle East. Llama, llama, llama. It's a lamentation, I think.
Nice.
I think they've lost five in a row now. So the Ottawa Senators, 6 o'clock tonight against the Jets. The LA Kings on Monday at 8. The clock is ticking, boys. The AHL, the Manitoba Moose, took on the Toronto Marlies last night at Winnipeg. And the Moose won 4-3. Western Hockey League, the Brandon Wheat Kings, playoffs, yes, but top of the list is the announcement in today's Free Press as well that Wheaties Matt Henry has been suspended for 8 games for breaking the drug violation rules. So, as I say, the playoffs, the Moose Jaw Warriors last night against Brandon Wheat Kings and Moose Jaw. The Warriors won that game 7-4. Belfast Giants battle the Glasgow Clan tonight. Bring your cudgel. First 100 fans get a life-size claymore. I just made that up, actually. I guess it would be a broadsword.
Very bad.
Scots, what would you prefer if the Glasgow Clan came to town? They should bring whiskey with them, is what I was thinking. Playoff tickets now on sale.
I don't think you take whiskey to Ireland.
Now, Jameson's, you're right, but this is Northern. What are they going to do? The Professional Women's Hockey League. It looks to me like the next games will be heard and seen and played on April 18th.
Right.
I don't know the reason.
Okay. Just briefly, I think you'll find there's a Jameson's distillery in Northern Ireland. Okay, go ahead.
Very good. PWHL, the top four teams qualify for the playoffs, and that starts on the week of May the 6th. Curling, the men's world.
Yes,
I had trouble reading the online. I'll tell you what I think I saw.
They are always bad.
Looks to me like Canada will be playing Czechoslovakia at 1 o'clock our time. Then 6 o'clock, Canada and Germany. I'm guessing at the times here, Sunday, 1 o'clock, and Canada and Scotland. That's Brad Gushue's team playing for Canada.
Good.
Major League Baseball, Blue Jays lost to the Tampa Bay Rays last night, 8-2. I think it was a grand slam
there.
Same again today at 3:10.
Okay.
Were you saying dancing and romancing in the 40s? Did anybody say that?
Well, yes? I didn't say that, I don't think, but I said Paul Weston and his orchestra might be coming up.
Well, it probably should be Some Enchanted Morning, but let's hear Some Enchanted Evening.
Okay.
Thank you.
dancing and romancing the 40s. What are we up to, about 1949 now? So we're coming to the end of this little box set, hoo-ha.
Do you know what, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say it was Paul Weston and his orchestra. Trust the song, exactly. A wise man once said it's an aphorism with many applications. I mean, you can, well, as a caveat, advising singers to resist too much in interpretation. You know, we've got a good thing going for you. Reminder to compose it. A good song can stand on its own outside its original context. So, Paul Weston's instrumental recording, Great Ballad from South Pacific, of course. Say, we sing this.
Well, I was going to say, I think we mentioned we joined a choir, and we're having our big year-end concert.
Hoo-ha.
At St. John's Cathedral.
Right. So we are not the choir invisible then. No, we'll be the choir visible.
No, yes,
and audible.
That's right. It's on Sunday, the 26th of May.
Okie dokie. I better write that in my calendar.
For some reason, I've got 23 after that. So
I do have a white shirt. I need a white shirt, black pants.
That's right, and a colorful tie.
Big Panama with a purple hat band.
That's
a big bopper. All right, because...
Yep. To put that in your calendar, that's all I can say.
I'm going to say this. Who did the music for?
Rodgers
and Hammerstein, of course.
Yep.
Right, you are. Right. So I can be the Ezio Pinza role in when we sing the... No, I better sing in the chorus. Suddenly just jump out from the crowd, not a good idea. Now, I said I had the answer to everything.
Yes.
And if you watch the news at any amount of time, you hear this often. I think this sums up a lot of the news, actually. Fears.
We'll find you acting on your best.
wrong there, Ron. You're not wrong there. Everybody wants to rule the world.
It seems like it. Not from, me, really.
From Tears for Fears, from the CD, Peter's Friends, the album, which was a soundtrack, obviously, to a movie, because the music on this, hoo-ha, picked it up for a song, as you'd expect,
right.
From the MCC. Tears for Fears, formed back in 1981. Kurt Smith and Roland Orzabal.
Right.
Big noise, till they had an acrimonious split.
Yes.
Everybody wants to rule the band. I'm not sure.
Right.
Not sure.
Who knows?
Back together in 2000.
Yep.
They're not touring in 2024.
Right.
But they have their own website. You can look them up. I interviewed
Roland. They still have. Who did you interview?
Roland Orzabal.
Wow.
I don't think he wanted to be there.
Ooh.
He was across the street at the CBC.
Right.
Well, they'd probably been playing the night before, or he was on a Cross Canada Beat the Drum tour.
Right. For an album.
And we had a national show.
Right.
So, of course, who are you going to call?
Yeah.
Nightlines. And I think he was okay until, I think Porter whispered in my ears, I'd gone over the research, ask him about Primal Scream Therapy.
Uh-oh.
He didn't start screaming, but he wasn't happy.
Okay. Oh, okay.
He wasn't happy. I don't know what magazine that came out of. But he suddenly became mute, which is not what you want in an interview or from a musician at 6:18. 6:18. Carol, if you will stand on that chair.
Okay.
Stand on that chair. Push, push, push. Just above your head there. As the search goes on across the universe. Yes. Oh, there's something there now. Pretty sure.
July 1974. Earl Warren.
Some years ago, I had the privilege of meeting the world's oldest man. At least he said he was. And he was so dogmatic about it that the promoters of a cartoon strip that specialized in unbelievable oddities brought the old man up to New York from his native Columbia to have him examined by a team of doctors at the Cornell Medical Center. He was an Indian. He was 4 feet 4 inches high, and he had an alligator hide complexion. He said he was 167, born the same year as the American Constitution. When the name of George Washington was suggested to him to help him fix his generation, he said he remembered the man well. But he resented coming all the way to New York. He wanted to be left alone to go about his business, which at that time was the business of looking for a sixth wife to comfort him in his approaching old age. The pathologists and gerontologists who were let loose on him had only to say how old he was. It says something, not very much, for gerontology, which is the science of studying old age, that he fooled them. They put out a report at the end of the day and announced that they'd weighed him, tapped him, pumped him, injected him, photographed his arteries and lungs and joints, chemically analyzed all his juices, and otherwise subjected him to all the splendid new tests devised by the modern specialty of geriatrics. And they concluded with the profound discovery that he was 4 feet 4 and weighed 80 pounds. He was also alive. Then came the punchline. Medical science, they pronounced, possesses at present no methods of determining the exact age of any adult. This conclusion didn't make the subject feel any better about his enormous trek north. When it was over, he was one angry midget, and he was exposed to a press conference. He began at once to swipe at the photographers. A laughing girl went to comfort him, and he planted a right on her nose. Said one of the doctors, he was probably very tame in his youth. Old men tend to take on all comers. This exchange was very casual at the time, but the doctor's reply ran so counter to the accepted wisdom about old age that I never forgot it. As time went on, and I was able to watch young politicians age and mellow and grow more conservative than ever, I noticed that very rarely there was a man who mellowed like overripe fruit into acidity. They were usually men who'd seemed to be committed all their lives to a bland, comfortable conservatism, and then something happened, something unexplained by the geriatric experts. It wasn't that they grew into the familiar type of the peppery conservative, but that they grew at once more mellow and more radical. Today, we have the opportunity to talk about the most startling example of such a change that we've seen in any American public man this century. For in the first week in July, 1974, in Washington, Earl Warren died at 83. Chief Justice of the United States from 1953 to 69, the most controversial of American judges, perhaps since the first Chief Justice, John Marshall, and the man who more than any other encouraged and presided over the most profound social revolution the United States has known since its Civil War. Warren was appointed as Chief Justice when he was 62 by President Eisenhower, who saw in him, as we all did, a dependable conservative Republican, an old district attorney very much for God and Mother and very much against sin, crime, national health insurance, the communists, and the Democrats. Just the man to cool the reforming zeal of the majority of Franklin Roosevelt's appointees to the court. The ideal non-rocker of the boat. Well, Eisenhower came to say that the appointment of Warren was the biggest damn fool mistake I ever made. Looking back over his life not many months ago, Warren himself said sweetly, "On the court, I saw things in a different light." Seeing things in a different light is not an unfamiliar experience to Supreme Court justices, though it's rarely mentioned by historians, and odder still, seems never to be anticipated by presidents. Every president, however much he may grant that the Supreme Court is a third branch of government independent of the Congress and the presidency, every president naturally likes to appoint judges who share his general political and social views. But a president is sometimes deceived into thinking that he has thereby installed a ventriloquist's doll on the court. But gradually the new man nestles into the realization that he's going to be paid for life, whatever he decides, that he will never have to seek election, that he can be above the political battle. He can, in short, afford to become himself. Earl Warren was born in Los Angeles, the son of a father born in Sweden and a mother born in Norway. His father was a train repairman on the Southern Pacific Railroad. And the son, from boyhood through middle age, appeared to follow the prototype of the all-American nice boy. He was called, from his sunny disposition and big moon face, Pinky. He went through the public schools. He played the cornet in the school band. He worked as a truck driver and a freight handler on the railroads and managed to put himself through the University of California. Then he went on to study law and practice it. And after time out as an infantry lieutenant in the First World War, he eventually became a district attorney. He prosecuted malefactors vigorously, joined the Elks, became a reliable...
Ancient radio waves go on and on and on and on and on. The voice of, you recognized, Alistair Cook.
Oh, Alistair Cook, yes. Of course.
Born Alfred Cook, died on this day in 2004. British American, that's putting it the right way. Writer whose work as a journalist, television personality, radio broadcaster, done primarily in the U.S. Of course, Letter from America is what we heard there. And, of course, also he was at PBS Masterpiece Theater.
Right.
From 1971 to 1992. He had the job for 22 years. And he continued to present Letter from America until shortly before his death. I can remember sitting in a parking lot, probably the Grand Park, might have been, because he was on CBC, I guess. They were
playing
one of his letters. Might have been his last. digging. And so I kept the car, sat in the car, and waited until he finished. He had that kind of storytelling ability.
Yeah.
626. Also died on this day in 1840, Beau Brummel.
Oh.
Dandy. I was going to say dedicated follower of fashion, staying with the Kinks, but wait a minute. He set the fashion. And imagine.
Yes.
What did I say? Died in 1840. We're still talking about him now in 2024.
That's right. But he was what we might call bohemian now, but it was like.
Right.
Exaggerated.
Well, his sexual activities brought him to a bad end, I can tell you that.
Oh, dear.
But we have the band.
Oh.
The Beau Brummels.
Okay.
Here's one of my faves.
Sure.
I hate to say it, but I told you so. Don't mind my preaching to you. I said, don't trust them, baby, now you know. You don't learn everything there is to know in school. Wouldn't believe me when I gave advice. I said that he was a tease. If you won't help, you better ask me nice. So be sincere, convince me with a pretty please. Laugh, laugh, I thought I'd die. It seems so funny to me. Laugh, laugh, you met a guy who taught you how it feels to be lonely, oh so lonely. Don't think I'm being funny when I say you got just what you deserve. I can't help feeling you found out today. You thought you were too good, you had a lot of nerve. Won't say I'm sorry for the things I've said. I'm glad he packed it to go. You kept on bragging he was yours instead. Found you don't know everything that is to know. Laugh, laugh, I thought I'd die. It seems so funny to me. Laugh, laugh, you met a guy who taught you how to feel. Don't close your ears to me. Take my advice and you find out that being just another girl won't cause you misery. Don't say you can't get any boy to call. Don't be so smug or else you'll find you can't get any boy at all. You'll wind up that way, he says, on the shelf. Laugh, laugh, I thought I'd die. It seems so funny to me. Laugh, laugh, you met a guy who taught you how it feels to be lonely.
Teenage boy's delight, wallowing in a good wallow there, so self-pity. You can't go wrong in that. What other instrument than the harmonica can give
well,
a lonely, wailing sound?
You have a friend that plays harmonica very well.
You're thinking of the old blues man himself.
Yes, Stork.
Stork, well, he hasn't picked it up for a long time. He came together for the reunion.
No, but he was like Paul Butterfield or whoever. Or somebody else that you're looking startled about what I said, so obviously wrong.
No, no, very good, very good. Yes.
But that was the sort of style that he did.
So that was from the Beau Brummels, the best of the Beau Brummels, 64 to 68. See, I got this into the music. You can, too. It took me a long time checking every week what comes in new.
Yes.
Get on their mailing list.
Ah.
Because they've got bands coming up. They're performing live. They're free on Friday nights.
Oh, cool.
And Record Day is coming. Record Store Day.
Right.
Into April. And I think it's next weekend. You can pick up your incentives there at Into the Music.
Ah,
so
good
if you
thinking.
Donated to CKUW.
Sure.
And you're getting a goodie in some shape or form that you can hold in your hand. You want to pop down to Into the Music on the next weekend then. Best of the Bull Bromes at 6:31.
Yep.
Carolyn Kibben, I wanted to mention the Free Press book pages then as well.
Yes.
In today's Free Press, now known as the book pages, right?
Oh, right.
Yes.
It's actually called books.
Exactly. So I see a new title from Maggie Thrash called Rainbow Black, Drama of the Satanic Panic of the 1980s and 90s, linked with modern themes in this deft adult novel. Debut, says Keith Cadieu. It's always good to hear in a debut novel, don't you know? I see Edmonton author Myrna Kostash has won the $25,000 Kobzar Book Award. We talked about that the other week. For her memoir, Ghosts in a Photograph, a chronicle, published by New West Press. $25,000 award presented biennially, twice every 2 years. That's got to be the way.
Biennially.
By the Shevchenko Foundation, awarded to a book with thematic connections to the Ukrainian-Canadian experience. ARP Books here in town, holding a First Friday's talk. So if you want to grumble together, at its office, 20570 Arthur Street, April the 5th, 7 to 8 p.m., featuring a pair of the publisher's authors discussing inner city Winnipeg, Owen Tabes, author of Stolen City, Island Falls, and Kathy Mallett, co-editor, Indigenous Resistance and Development in Winnipeg, build on a December 2023 conversation they had with Nala Ayed. CBC Ideas about Winnipeg's inner city. Admission is free, and all ARP book titles will be on sale, 20% off. There's a Winnipeg for you. When is that again? First Friday talk, so it'll be April 5th, next Friday, then, 7 to 8 at their office, 20570 Arthur Street. Winner of the Manitoba Writers Guild second annual Dave Williamson short story competition, officially known as the Dave. So Calgary's Lisa Pollock took first place, $1,000 first prize. Grand Point, Manitoba's Lindsay Taylor won the $2,000 second prize. Third place goes to Winnipeg's Yvonne Kyle. And Islandingen Doggeren, the Icelandic Festival of Manitoba, has opened submissions for their poetry and short story contest. Competition is open to all in three categories, junior, 12 and under, intermediate, 13 to 18, and open. So the theme of this year's festival is celebrating a century of Falcona. So if you don't know what Falcona is, you better look it up if you're going to write
I'll
about
see.
It. Yes.
I have
maximum
no idea.
Three poems and or one short story. Details. Details. WFP. That'd be the Winnipeg Free Press. WFP.to/jib. J-I-B. Details. More to be known if you look it up in today's Winnipeg Free Press. Nick Martin. New mystery review as well for The Search by Hannah Richel, and new in paperback, Cinema Speculation by Quentin Tarantino. Revered director, it offers insights on his craft and influences, focusing on American films from the 1970s and the impact they had on his young mind. And new in paperback, then Fane by Anne-Marie MacDonald, set in the UK in the late 19th century, a woman with a mysterious condition who has been kept from the world by her father, discovers a mysterious artifact in a bag. You may remember we interviewed Anne-Marie MacDonald when she was here.
Yes, you did.
Hi, I'm Anne-Marie MacDonald, author of Fane, and you're listening to The Saturday Morning Show on CKUW-FM 95.9.
Now, as promised, advice from Mary. From Mary as I turn to the Spectator magazine for February 17, 2007. Question. On occasions, when I have been to stay with celebrities, quotation marks, Scrabble is sometimes suggested. While I'm not particularly good at this game, I've always felt it is incumbent on me not to exert myself and to let the celebrity win, in case their ego should be too fragile to cope with being trounced by a person they perceive to be of lower status. Is my instinct correct, Mary? Or do you take the opposing view held by my husband? By my first husband. Anyways, this is what celebrities welcome. An element of competition, since they are clearly competitive by nature, which is why they have got to where they have. ST devises wheelchair. Mary's answer? You are both right in a way. Because the celebrity must win. It is your unspoken duty to boost their self-confidence and shore up their sense of swagger. However, you must create the illusion but they have deserved the victory. Therefore, you should spend most of the game winning and keeping them only a few points behind you before making a calculated error to let them win in the end. This is possible with Scrabble, unlike some other games. Dear Mary from the pages of the Spectator magazine from a long time ago. 6:37, Turner Classic Movie Channel. Today, 2:45, Fort Apache from 1948, directed by John Ford. John Wayne, Henry Fonda, Shirley Temple. 5 o'clock tonight, Get Carter. We were just talking about that the other day.
Yeah.
Something showed up, either.
Can't remember why.
Michael Caine, you mentioned.
Yeah, oh, yes, well. There's picture? A biography of him in one of the... It's an autobiography, I think.
Get Carter, 1971. Yep. Michael Caine as Henry. Britt Eklund. Small-time gangster wants to know how his brother died. Yes, it's very unpleasant. 5 o'clock, 11:30 night. Pushover from 1954. Fred McMurray goes bad. Kim Novak, a police detective. And bank robber's girl. Uh-oh, you know, this is Noir Alley. Tonight at 11:30, which means repeated Sunday at 9. Has to go through the whole thing again. Didn't learn anything from tonight. Apparently not. 11:30 tonight, 9 o'clock tomorrow. Sunday, 11 a.m. For Easter, Godspell.
Oh, right.
1973.
I don't think I ever saw the movie.
They're showing several Easter movies, including at 7 o'clock.
Yes.
Tomorrow night.
Yes.
1948, Judy Garland, Fred Astaire.
Ah.
The Easter Parade.
Oh.
I love the piano, I love the piano, I love to hear somebody play upon a piano, a grand piano, it simply carries me away. I know a fine way to treat a Steinway. I love to run my fingers o'er the keys, the ivories, and with the pedal I love to meddle when Paderewski comes this way. I'm so delighted if I'm invited to hear the long-haired genius play. So you can keep your fiddle and your bow, give me a P-I-A-N-O. Oh, 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 I love to stop right beside an upright or a high-toned baby grand.
Shout, cut it out, cut it out, cut it out. they cry, for goodness sake, don't keep us all away with your snooky, ooky, ooky baby talk.
Fiddle up on your violin, lay right on it, rest your chin upon it. Doggone, you better begin and lay an overture upon your violin. Hurry up with your violin, make it sooner, don't you stop the tuner. Fit, 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 fiddle the middle of your ragtime violin.
Parade with Fred Astaire and Judy Garland. As I said, turn to Classic Movie Channel then. And Sunday night at 7 o'clock. 6:43. Carol McKibben, have you been working on the jumble there? Got the jumble?
Oh, certainly.
JMB, two jumbles. Because of the holiday, I'm guessing.
Well, how about one at a time?
I think that would be good.
Okay. V-A-R-N-E.
Raven. Raven the bird, hey? Okay. I'm raving about how good I am at the jumble.
I think you must have looked at it. That was
quick. I am shocked and appalled. I've been cut to the quick, and you can't be a man with a cut quick.
I see.
6:43, because born on this day.
Yes.
Anna Sewell.
Who?
Anna Sewell.
Oh.
Author of?
Yes, Black Beauty.
That's it. Did you read it as a kid?
Oh, of course.
Girls, madness.
My dad got Black Beauty as a prize at school for something.
Interesting.
It may have been, he built a little barn out of who knows what
popsicle
you had around
sticks.
It those days.
No, you wouldn't.
Well, no, he wouldn't have popsicle
splinters.
Sticks, would he?
And he was glad to have
twigs
them.
Or something,
twigs.
Little pieces
That's
of, he may have chopped little, made things that a similar size to popsicle sticks. In any case.
Did he live in Quebec back then?
Yes, he grew up in Quebec. Born, grew up.
Right.
But they were an Irish family, right? So.
Right, you are.
Yeah.
I've seen the History Minute where they keep their name.
Right, that's, well, that's right. But no, they weren't in a French family.
No, but
they
that's
were
the History
just
Minute.
Irish. Is, that's a different
out.
Story.
Yep.
But, well, in any case, he was teased a lot by the French kids.
For being Irish.
Or English speaking or something.
Right.
Yep.
So, born on this day then, 1820.
Anna Sewell.
English author, Black Beauty, died 1878.
Yes.
And also...
She was not that old when she died. She had some disease that they're not sure of.
Well, she would be 58.
Yeah.
Right. Undiagnosed, perhaps. Well, also, born on this day in 1970, Secretariat.
Really? Yep. 1970?
Yep. All horses all the time.
Yeah.
Triple Crown winner in 1973.
Wow.
Buying a mare like that, but buy her if you must. He bit the end off his cigar and spat it in the dust. She's old, she's lame and barren too. She's not worth feeding hay. But I'll give her this. He blew smoke at me. She was something in her day. I recall her well 10 years ago. She was a winner in her prime. She was fast and lean and willing, but they raced her past her time. And though she had the heart, her legs were gone, and it wasn't hard to see. They kept her at it in the hopes of just one more small victory. So she was shunted round from track to track, from Kentucky up to Maine. They'd run her in cheap claimers, all doped up to mask her pain. And if it's my advice you want, I'd say the poor thing's had her day. You'd be throwing good cash after bad, it's best you turned away. Well, they led her around the auction shed, and the bidding started low. She'll go for dog food, someone said, the market's been that slow. But she raised her head and pricked her ears, and before the hammer fell, she was mine. My friend turned round to me. You're soft-headed, I can tell. But she's been shoved from pillar to post, said I, and always done her best. They used her up, they wrung her dry, you'd think she'd earned her rest. So if she does not but end her days beneath some shady tree, I'll have saved her from the knacker's yard, and that's enough for me. Some since then, the more so since she's been in full, she eats enough for ten. And this morn as I crept to the barn around about 3:30, there stood nursing on still trembling legs one more small victory.
From his CD, Small Victories. At 6:49, who'd like a laugh? Who'd like a smile?
I need a laugh after that song.
Right, you are. Right, you are. Right, say no more.
Yes.
Listen up.
Okay.
Hello, I'm Michael Flanders, the beautiful and bearded one. And the first question comes from practically everybody. When did you and Donald Swan first meet, Mr. Swan?
Well, we first met at school in 1936, and we first appeared on stage together in At the Drop of Hat on the last day of 1956.
So the next question really is, what were we up to during that missing 20 years? Well, then we wrote, hence the title. Among other things, like going to university, winning the war, and so on, We wrote songs for reviews. And this evening we've got together with a group of friends we made in those days, Pat Lancaster, Charlotte Mitchell, Anne Rogers, and Julian Orchard, to give some of those songs another airing. Songs of which we have no record. Because, well, they didn't make records of reviews in those bad old days.
We wrote our first song in the summer of 1948.
Brilliant.
I'd got over to Michael's home near Hampstead Heath to see if he could think of some words for a tune I'd written, which went something like this. It all sounds a bit like Gilbert and Sullivan, don't you think?
Yes, I see it does. Well, why not? It must be terribly boring in the Doily Cart Company, having to do everything exactly as it always has been done. Idea. And there we were. I put some words to that tune, and then I wrote some more words for Donald to set to more music. He wrote some more music, which I set to words, then he wrote some more words, and I wrote some music. And it all went beautifully hand in hand until we ended up with a trio for three people.
We tried it out on our families and friends.
And anyone who happened to be passing.
And we changed it and polished it. And finally, I took it off to show to the producer, Laurier Lister. Right. And he said he'd like to have it for his new review, Oranges and Lemons.
And the opening of that review in November 1948 was an exciting evening for me. When I was winched into a seat at the old Lyric Theatre, Hammersmith, to see the very first performance of our very first song, wittily called In the Doily Cart.
Spelt C-A-R-T.
Sung then by Dinah Churchill, Max Aden and Rose Hill, and recreated for you now by Anne Rogers, Julian Orchard and Pat Lancaster.
I've been a little maid from school since I was just a tiny tot.
With jack points gags I've played the fool till I'm the only point they've got.
I've toured through all the English-speaking nations and can no longer play my part in a patience.
For one man in his time plays the same old part.
Can you wonder then that I'm a little tired of doily cart? Three little Savoyards are we, tra-la-la-la, tra-la-la-la. Started in 1893, tra-la-la-la-la. With Gilbert and Sullivan, we've toured from dump to dump. Tra-la-la and Sullivan and Gilbert can take a running jump from year to year, and dump to dump can go and take a running jump. Three little Savoyards are we, tra-la-la-la, tra-la-la-la. Started in 1893, tra-la-la-la-la.
Dear little town of Nanki-Poo,
smile, turn, pace to the right.
Canst thou believe my heart is true?
Terrible house tonight.
Terrible house tonight.
One that with tender passion fire.
Turn, pace, hand over heart.
Woe to the day that we were hired by Doily Cart.
Why is it so admired? This business first inspired by former artists long retired from Doily Cart.
Anything new is disallowed.
Turn, pace.
Wait for the pause.
Blasphemous change would shock the crowd, following in their scores.
Following in their scores.
Novel approach is not required.
Bounce, boing.
Out of the heart.
We've done our best, but we need a rest from Doily Cart. We need a rest from Doily Cart.
But the copyright's expiring in a year or two, no more. And then at last we'll have the chance to settle this old score.
Score.
We'll buy the Covent Garden and have the operas rewritten with new words by J.B. Priestley. New tunes by Benji Britten. Till the end of this light operatic coma, we're going off to sing in Oklahoma.
And Swan, but as a way, in a way, we'd never heard them before. And the reason for that, we have to thank Don McBain,
right,
who gave us this little disc.
Right.
He said, and then we wrote a review of reviews by Michael Flanders and Donald Swan. I had never seen this
on
an LP.
Thanks, Don.
Or elsewhere. It looks sort of official. So perhaps we can grill him at breakfast.
Right.
Who wouldn't want to be grilled at breakfast? Or, you know, if you're having a burger, for example. Anyways, at 6:56.
Are you having a burger for breakfast?
No.
Relief.
I'm looking.
Yes.
At the obituary from the Winnipeg Free Press, period December 23rd, 2023, for Maureen Margaret Murphy. Very long obit it was. died December the 11th. Maureen's first love was music, indeed, classically trained for many years. So you can look this obit up, or you can go to today's Winnipeg Free Press. Now, you know the section that has the obituaries?
Yes.
Front page?
Yes.
Passages, and there the full page is about Maureen.
Oh.
All manner of pictures right through her career. A life story written by Jen Zaretti. Died in December from complication of COVID. She was 73. She had always lots of fun, said her younger sister, Eileen Murphy. Harmonies, well, they loved to sing. None of us was that good. But when we were doing the little folk singer kind of thing, we could do the three chords. We'd sing all the time. We loved Peter, Paul, and Mary. Anything we could do harmonies to. So, of course, those harmonies would provide Sugar and Spice, sometimes stylized as Sugar and Spice with the ampersand, a Winnipeg folk pop band that found early success to a Randy Bachman-written single, Not to Return, released in 1968 in a 1969 cover of Peter, Paul, and Mary's Cruel War. Now, the trouble with that was that Peter Yarrow, Peter, Paul, and Mary, wasn't properly credited on the single and threatened to sue, effectively putting a ceiling on the band's upward trajectory.
But I thought it was some from the Civil War, so now I'm confused.
Give a listen.
Okay.